Hello, and welcome to Mother Daughter Earthcast, a show that will help you navigate the eco world and live a more colorful and conscious life. We'll inform, inspire, and embolden you.
And most importantly, we'll have fun along the way to a more planet-caring lifestyle together.
Welcome back to another episode of Mother Daughter Earthcast. This is Mariana Archibald.
And I'm Jenna Woods.
So, Mom, who are we talking with today?
We're going to be visiting with Chris Weisinger. He is the owner of the Southern Bulb Company, and he has also written a fabulous book called The Bulb Hunter. And he's got a great story.
He does have a great story. And for those of y'all who want a little sneak peek behind the scenes, if we have anyone on the show that is plant related, chances are they were recruited by my mom. And Chris is no exception. You knew Chris from your plant stuff, right?
Yeah.
He's all of the things.
We're in the plant world together. And in fact, all of the bulbs in my yard are either from or from one of my good friends in the Daffodil Society. She always gives me bulbs also. But no, I've purchased a lot of bulbs from Chris because I know he has great, unusual bulbs that will come back year after year after year here in Dallas.
That's right. How could I forget? We had to do the tour around your front yard before we chatted with Chris, where you just showed me every single bulb that you got from him. It was delightful.
I know.
Y'all missed out. It was. It actually, all jokes aside, it really was. And now I want bulbs from Chris. And he actually mentioned that he might be starting his own Patreon account where he does like bulbs of the month. So that would be super fun.
Yes, because he has bulbs that will bloom every month of the year in the South.
I know, which was amazing. I didn't know that you could have bulbs blooming throughout the year.
I know. The bulbs in my yard have been even more important this year because the rest of my yard looks so sad from the freeze. So the only color I have in my yard are my bulbs.
I know. It's they're cute. They're really cute.
I know.
Well, if y'all want to learn more about all of the amazing work that Chris is doing with bulbs and his story and just stay in touch with what he's doing, he mentions it again in the podcast, and obviously you can find it in the show notes, but you can always go to his website, southernbulbs.com, and he also has a blog, which is at bulbhunter.com. So check out his work because he's awesome.
And you'll get to hear how he got the name The Bulb Hunter.
Oh, yeah. I know. He does have some name iterations. So that was cool. Well, Mom, before we dive into Chris and our interview with him, anything you got going on?
Well, it's been really interesting being in the landscaping world the past month or so here in North Texas after our horrible freeze. And the conclusion is, after COVID 2020 and the horrible freeze, everyone is just getting so many learning opportunities to become more patient.
I'm sure that's exactly what everyone wants to hear.
Oh my gosh. I have had to have so many plant therapy sessions with my customers. And the poor things, I know they're sick and tired of hearing it, but I keep saying, be patient. Don't rip out the plants. Don't cut them yet. Just let the plants heal and let nature take its course. And we will, with time, the right answer will become clear and obvious. But, people need, are having lots of patient opportunities.
So listeners, if you have a landscaper, does he or she sound anything like my mom? Plant landscaping therapy is what she offers, truly, truly.
It is. It's amazing. It really is. And people have needed it so much after COVID. I was noticing we had to do a lot of plant therapy we got to do a lot of plant therapy during COVID because people were spending so much time indoors and were not able to socialize like they normally had. So they'd been spending more time in their gardens and becoming connected with them and wanted to talk about it.
I know, that's a great sign. Well, speaking of plant therapy, if y'all want to be part of some virtual plant therapy, head on over to our Patreon page, because we have a lot of our courses there are plant focused, courtesy of the mama. And so that's patreon.com/mother-daughter-earth. And that's a great way to support us. We would really appreciate everyone who's helping us out on Patreon. And another thing that you could do that really helps us out is if you could please rate and review us on iTunes or Apple Podcast. Really helps us get out there and just share the positive environmental messages that we have to talk about with more people and have more people hear about the amazing world of southern bulbs. Anyways, without further ado, please welcome Chris Weisinger, the owner of Southern Bulb Company, to Mother Daughter Earthcast.
We are thrilled to have Chris Weisinger with us today. And Chris is the owner of Southern Bulb Company and also the co-author of a great book called The Bulb Hunter. So, Chris, welcome to Mother Daughter Earthcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we're thrilled. We really are.
I'm glad you like the book. I'm still too afraid to read my book.
So. Chris, I get it. I'm afraid to listen to our podcasts. And so when my husband is playing them in the background, because he's committed to listening to every single one of them. Thank you, Toby. And I hear it. I'm like, oh, I got to go into the other room. I don't know if I can do it.
What does that say about us? I don't know. I'm the same way. I can't even read like one chapter, but it's a fun story. I tried to make that the Bulb Hunter a fun storybook so that it's entertaining and educational at the same time about starting the Southern Bulb Company and probably a lot of the items that you're going to ask about today.
So. Yes, I loved it. I was really tired on Sunday and I curled up in bed and read it on Sunday and had the best day ever.
Well, and unfortunately for you, Chris, mom's first question for you starts with a large quote from your book.
Oh, man. Okay, let's have it.
So at the very beginning of the book, you start off with a quote that says an adventure, according to J.R.R. Tolkien, is a there and back again story. One leaves home for an adventure and while gone has exciting and daring experiences, but then returns home to a life as it was before. A quest is what happens when one leaves home with the extreme possibility that there is no chance for return. And if a return is made, things have so changed that life will never be the same again. If I had realized this was going to be a quest, I might not have even begun. End of quote. So why did you choose? I mean, tell us about your quest and journey with bulbs. And I just love that quote. It really resonated with both of us.
Yeah. And we'd love to know why you chose that as the introduction to your book.
Right. Okay. Well, it's, you know, that's not that bad because I'm essentially borrowing from Tolkien and not myself, you know, and he was so overquoted there for a while, but he still has some really good stuff. And that's one of those that resonates, you know, that would defeat, the reason I use that, I did a lot of driving earlier in the years, especially like, you know, 04 all the way to 2010. And I'm trying to remember who the name of the gentleman. He used to be at NPR and then he did his own podcast. And, you know, they're all on cassette tapes at the time. And he would do these long form, in-depth interviews kind of before podcasting was cool. And I can hear his voice right now. Oh, and I will get it to you. And we'll need to maybe mention it later. But anyways, he had this really in-depth Tolkien presentation by a professor at Baylor. And you know, if you've read the Lord of the Rings trilogy or Bilbo Baggins and the Hobbit. They're fun stories. And it was one of the first stories that I got into as a kid, as you know, 12 or 13, that I actually read from start to finish. And yeah, so I was really kind of intrigued with it. And then I heard this, this podcast really kind of summarize all of them. I thought, golly, that's, that's sort of me. You know, the first adventure, the first story was fun. It was like, oh, let's go collect some bulbs. Let's farm them, or I enjoy bulbs, but I'm not changing or altering my life. Then I started to realize once I had committed to this way of life that I was changing. There was no going back. There was no going back to a safe job. There was no going back to living in California. I'm committed to Texas. I'm committed to living in Northeast Texas. At the time, I was committed to living in that little red cabin at 500 square feet farming bulbs. You know, I'm living in Tyler, Texas with three daughters and a wife. And a lot of that was because I started a flower bulb company, collecting flower bulbs from across the Southeast and farming them where I needed sandy loam soil and good rainfall. And that I chose the quote just because, as you look back, it really summarizes what happened. It wasn't a there and back again story. Things did not go back to the way they were. Not just the bulbs and the way the business has led my lifestyle, but, the investors I got had all influenced me. My mom died. Dr. Welch, who was his wife died. And so now I've got all these deaths, and then my dog died, and I'm in the middle of nowhere farming bulbs by myself, felt like in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, what in the world's happened to my life? You know, I've left sunny California, even though my folks are from Houston. I was born in Louisiana, but I've left everything out there. I went to Texas A&M, a horticulture major, and now I'm in the middle of the woods in a 500 square foot cabin farming bulbs. I'm like, well, this sure feels like a quest at this point. There's no going back, and might as well embrace this and become the new person that you're becoming, and hoping that's becoming a better person, trying not to think about all the failures along the way and just trying to think about today and, putting one foot in front of the other. So yeah, it seemed to summarize my life in a pretty good way.
I love that, because I will say that resonates with me as well. And sometimes it feels like, it's not a little red cabin, but you sit there and you're like, now what am I doing again? Like, what is my job? But I would love to, as a follow-up to that and hearing you talk about your drive to continue this work, what is it about bulbs that draws you so much? What is that connection and drive there?
Yeah. Well, I was definitely captivated by the beauty as a child. And I can tell that story of my first tulip, which
please do.
Was important.
Mom told me that story and I loved it.
Okay. Well, hey, I'll start with that. And then I can maybe still use the bulbs to answer your question more in depth now as a guy who just turned 40 a few months ago. I'm still struggling with that.
Well, hold on, Chris. I just had one of those big birthdays.
Big decade.
Mom, party. Announce it proudly. She's 60 and she's awesome. And we had a great party.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm extremely awesome. Youthful for my age.
She is.
Just as you are, too. So.
Yes. Well, we had a fun 40th. We got a dance floor and put it in the backyard. And we just danced the night away. I spent most of the time dancing with my 3-year-old who didn't understand what was going on. But. All right. Well, as a child, here I am. We've left Houston because the economy tanked in the 80s to keep a job. My dad had moved to this beautiful place called Bakersfield, California, which is very hot, very dry. I said, there's some sarcasm in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bakersfield was good to me. I love Bakersfield. I worked in the mountains as a kid, sleeping out on a backpack every night, or we'd go to the coast, but the valley was pretty hot. And it was there that we did enjoy gardening as a family. And we'd go to the garden center, it felt like almost every weekend, every Saturday, just to pick up a 6-pack of annual colors, whatever was kind of in bloom, or some seeds, or just to walk around. It was a fun outing. One fall, though, we went there and there was a pop-up display that wasn't there the week before. And it was a display of all these cardboard boxes with really pretty pictures on the outside of them. But on the inside were these little brown things that look like rocks. And I didn't quite understand the connection between a rock and that pretty picture on the side of the cardboard box, but I assumed there was a connection. I think my mom let me spend like $10 to $15 and get some bulbs, as it turned out to be flower bulbs. And I put them in the ground that Saturday in the fall, and I forgot about them. And I remember fast forwarding to the spring when I had essentially forgotten that I planted them. And almost magically, seemingly overnight, one of those brown rocks had turned into a beautiful red tulip bulb. And I was awestruck with the color, the form, the beauty, how something that pretty could be tucked inside a little brown rock and then bloom. And I fell in love with flower bulbs right then and there at that young age. Now, next year, I was looking for, I mean, it didn't last long. It was hot. I think it lasted 3 or 4 days, but it was so spectacular. I was looking forward to next year's bloom. Well, next year the foliage came up and there was no bloom. I thought, okay, well, we'll wait another year. Well, next year nothing came up and I dug down into the dirt and found the rotted remains of what used to have been my red tulip bulb. And I was horticulturally scarred from a young age. What had I done to kill this bulb? Come to find out, you know, some bulbs are annuals and some bulbs are perennials, but I was really longing for perennial flower bulbs, meaning that they would come back every year and increase in number and look good and look better. I wanted perennial flower bulbs like that for warmer climates. And so when I went to Texas A&M as a horticulture major, I did 1 year at Bakersfield College as a horticulture major and then 4 years at Texas A&M as a horticulture major. Senior year, coming upon graduation, we had to, in one of our classes, Dr. Davies' class, we had to write a business plan to start a nursery, throw some numbers on it, put it all down on paper with a profit and loss statement. They really didn't want to throw us to the lamb, so to speak, if we were going to be doing a business. Mm-hmm. And I decided to write this idea of a business that focused on perennial flower bulbs for warmer climates. And Dr. Davies said, you know, you need to go upstairs in the horticulture building and talk to Dr. Welch. He was one of the original antique rose rustlers. He's passionate about heirloom flower bulbs as well. And so I did. I went up there and talked to Dr. Welch. He took me into his office. I think we probably talked an hour. What are you doing this spring break or this Christmas winter break? You need to go visit all these people. And he wrote down the name of them across the Southeast. And so I hopped in my car and I started driving across the Southeast visiting with gardeners that he knew, a lot of the members of the Southern Garden History Society, and started to discover that in these old home sites were the flower bulbs that we needed that fit the niche for perennial flower bulbs for warm climates would come back. They'd been in these yards for gardens for 50, 100 years plus. Homes, some of these are old home sites where the homes are gone, but lines of daffodils still mark the old home site. I think the most exciting thing was that eventually I found out it wasn't just daffodils. It was heirloom hyacinths, gladiolus, rain lilies, crinums, native bulbs. And if I was lucky enough, maybe an heirloom perennial red tulip bulb to scratch that childhood itch of a red perennial tulip for warmer climates. And so that's how I got started on the Southern Bulb Company. Seemed innocent enough, right? Just go meet people, collect some flower bulbs.
I know. Well, you probably have a similar experience with orchids, right? Seems innocent enough when you start.
Yeah, it started off with one plant. I always tell, and it was a hobby. I always tell people, be careful what hobby you choose.
Because I got to ask, how many do you have now?
Ooh, well, I used to, whenever I lived in Mexico, I lived in Mexico for 23 years?
No.
Okay. In fact, Mario.
For listeners, my mom and Chris do know each other from before in the plant world. So
yes. In fact, Mariana grew up in Mexico, and I was the first cut dendrobium orchid producer down in Mexico. And I did. Yes, that's what was my job for 20 years down in Mexico, and I had 3 large shade houses of production dendrobiums. I also had my collection of orchids, but I had thousands of dendrobium orchids for production.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and then ended up in Dallas, and there was not a big need for dendrobium orchid producers in Dallas. So now I'm a landscaper, and I get to use your bulbs in our customers' gardens, and just love them, and so do our customers. But
awesome, that's neat. Well, I think, you know, I was talking to, we had a landscaper from Houston come to the farm tour on Saturday, and he was excited about using the bulbs because he calls them freebies for his customers. They pay for them once, but they get free blooms for a lifetime.
Aww. I love that.
I thought it was clever. Yeah. To talk about the bulbs, though, and how they impact my life now, that to fulfill that, you know, through the whole quest, the whole life-altering story, you know, between bad decisions or deaths or whatever, you know, ups and downs in the business, mm-hmm. like the bulbs continue to bloom reliably every year. They continue to get better and better every year. Time marched on, and there was definitely a plan, a cycle that was still occurring. And that was important to remind me, you know, well, one, the older I get, the more I realize how selfish I am. You get married, you realize how selfish you are. You have daughters, you realize, man, I'm still pretty selfish about my time. And, you know, the bulbs have taught me, you know, this world, it really is a breath in this world that we're here. And in some ways it is about you, and in other ways it's not about you at all. And it was a humbling experience just to realize, okay, I might have a company called the Southern Bulb Company where I grow these flower bulbs, but, you know, in a way they're not mine. You know, I kind of helped tend them and put them in rows, but, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do and get better and better and prettier in spite of life's tragedies that get thrown our way. And, you know, that was sort of awe inspiring to me. So it went from, you know, being eye candy with that red tulip to all the different ones. That there's a bulb that blooms every single month of the year in Old Home Sites. We have something blooming every single month of the year on the farm. And it's just neat to see the changing seasons of life happen right in front of you.
That's amazing. So inspiring and, you know, insightful.
And they tell stories. I know that I live in the house that I grew up in, and my mother planted paperwhites, what, maybe 40, 50 years ago. And Chris, they're still coming up every year, and her bearded irises, they still come up. In fact, I even gave some to Mariana, and she has them at her house. And they just, you're leaving a legacy and a story.
And a story. Yeah. To prove that point, I've got a slide that I show when I'm giving presentations of oxbow lilies or schoolhouse lilies, or mm-hmm. the red fall blooming schoolhouse lily that, you know, Henry Oppervetter was a plantsman who lived in Texas in the late 1800s, and he botanized across Central and South America. And he brought this flower bulb back, and you still have this flower bulb in all these old kind of Central Texas, German and Czech communities everywhere. And so it's a legacy to those folks who planted that, or one of those original Texas pass along plants. And it's neat because it blooms when school starts in the fall. And my Josephine started kindergarten this fall, and it was blooming on our first day of school. And I almost cried. But I've got this picture of schoolhouse lilies making a ring around this really stately tree. And I'm like, so I say to the audience, the crowd, hey, obviously we know there's a tree here because we're looking at a tree. And then I flip to the next slide, where it's a really pretty, perfect circle of schoolhouse lilies, but there's no tree, it's just lawn. And I say, well, obviously there used to be a tree here. And mm-hmm. and it's kind of a visual representation of how the bulbs remember that there was a gardener who lived there. And then I make a joke. I'm like, so if you want to leave a legacy to your grandchildren, you write your name in flower bulbs, or
yes.
do something fun and clever.
That's so clever. But it's true. I love the fact that I have a piece of my grandmother in my garden, and those bulbs started, she planted them in the house where my mom first grew up. And then my grandmother took them from that house, transplanted them to the current house where my mom now lives. I have taken a batch and transplanted them in my first house. And it's just so nice. That's family legacy in a living being and then a living plant. And I think it's pretty magical.
It's such a strong connection to nature too. It's just,
it is.
And it's so important for people to be connected to nature. That's something that we talk about often, Chris, is we want people to have different ways of connecting with nature, because if you have connections with nature, you'll have a relationship with nature, and then you'll love nature, and you'll want to take care of the planet that we're on.
Right, right. Well, that reminds me of the jonquils, some of the first jonquils that I dug. Jonquils are the Narcissus jonquilla. They smell really sweet. They bloom late February, and they set seed. So they'll spread over these large areas. They'll what's called naturalize. So their perennials mean they come back, but they'll also naturalize. One of the first sites I dug was on a highway site where it was going from two lanes to four lanes. And it was a major U.S. highway construction project. And I called the contractor who was in charge of the project and said, hey, you know, I see you've got this big excavator and a dozer on the site, and it's full of this flower bulb that I'd like to collect before the road goes here. Not take them all. I mean, we can go over the rules of bulb hunting and always ask for permission and fill in your holes when you're done and leave a good amount behind. I just want to be clear on that. But this contractor said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm here." And he said, "All right, stay right there. I'm gonna come just visit with you." Mm-hmm. And he had no idea what I was talking about, which was evidenced by the fact that when he pulled up in his truck, he was rolling over the jonquils. He was doing it. No. I know. Rolled his window down. He said, "Now, what do you want?" And I showed him the jonquils that were right below us. And he said, "Well, look, in 2 weeks, this hill is not going to be here, so you can have whatever you want." Which is true. They're going to level the whole hill to make room for the road. I'll never forget. He came back the next day. This time he rolled around the jonquils and he put it in park and he got out and just kind of shooting the breeze for a little bit, chit-chatting about this and that. And I thought, well, something's come over this guy. You know, he's a different person. And then he kind of got to the point and he said, "You know, I was talking to my wife last night about these flowers. Do you think I could have some of these too?" I said, "Sure." I threw in the back of his truck and then he kept going. He said, "You know, after we talked yesterday, I just couldn't help it. I noticed there's another house up the road that we're going to be taking out. And it had this flower was kind of like this, but bigger and it was really pretty and it was on a long stalk." And he just went into great botanical detail. I'm like, holy smokes, this guy's in love with flowers all of a sudden. He's made this connection that you just talked about to nature, and he is never going to overlook flower bulbs again. He's connected. Mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I know that whenever the bearded irises that my mother brought to this house that we were just talking about, whenever they bloom and the smell of the bearded iris, it just takes me back to my childhood. And I think that's probably one of my first memories or connections with nature that I can remember, was that very specific fragrance of the bearded irises. I mean, it's not a particularly sweet fragrance like, you know, the paper whites or whatnot, but it has a very particular fragrance that just takes me back to 3 years old, where I'm in front of the my mother took photos of my cousins and me, you know, sitting in front of the bearded irises holding our little Easter baskets. And yeah.
Well, and speaking of that, that's a good segue into one of our questions, and we would love to get your insight. So my mom just mentioned that those irises that she had growing up bloomed around Easter time. Well, same irises that are now at my house were already blooming before our freeze a few weeks ago. I mean, end of January, beginning of February, they were already in bloom, along with my echinacea. Like, actually, my whole garden looked like it was spring already. So we would love to get your insight into changes in timing, and what have you seen over the past couple of decades in terms of the bulbs and plants in general?
Because of global warming, because or climate, of
climate change.
Change,
yeah.
Right. So it's been 17 years, and I've been doing this, and I've watched that very close. I don't necessarily have any anecdotal or empirical evidence to suggest that they are all blooming earlier. And I say that because it's only been 17 years. Is that a good data set, you know, to even use? But I look at the pictures, and the beautiful thing about all the pictures these days is they're all timestamped, right? Mm-hmm. And so I will be able to look at things that were blooming when, and I can't help it. Even if I got all the stock photos I need or something, I'm always taking pictures every week. And it's just a pendulum. It just kind of swings this way and swings that way, swings this way and swings that way. So I haven't seen it in a big way. But then again, I'm not taking scientific notes either all the time. I've looked for that because somebody asked me that 17 years ago, said, "Hey, you know, I live in zone XYZ where it's warmer. I'm going to go ahead and plant your bulbs because I think they're going to be fine up in the zone." Well, the zone data, I probably should have listened to the zone data, USDA zone data, because those bulbs, I'm pretty sure, died up where they were. So is it time to start pushing the limits on that, on zone usage? I would say probably need to listen to those potential lows. I mean, because they're still going to get wild fluctuations. Mm-hmm. I'll say we got to -6 on the farm this year, and everything that was in our zones alive and blooming, you know, anything that was trying to maybe push the limits on, like, was a zone 9 and grow out, got toasted. So I'm just going to anecdotally, obviously nothing empirical, but anecdotally, when I look at my pictures of the last 17 years, I am shocked when I see some things bloom early, but then it's like all of a sudden they kind of get back on the normal schedule and everything pretty much follows. I would say the widest variation of blooms is that the old fashioned paper whites you're talking about, Gina, where sometimes they bloom in November, sometimes they bloom in January, February. And you put the Chinese sacred lilies in there and the Narcissus Tezetta double Roman in there. Those will bloom really early or really late. Generally, they're blooming around December and November, or December and January, assuming a freeze doesn't get them. So I don't know. I'm not probably the best answer on that, but I just say anecdotally, I haven't seen it.
Well, that makes me feel better. I mean, and especially as if you were saying, you know, pendulum, one year they'll be early and the next year they'll kind of be on what we time frame of what we expect. Makes me feel better because I'm telling you, Chris, this year before the freeze, I was like, what is my garden doing? It is January and it looks like it's March.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was.
Yeah.
Shasta daisies, totally. Echinacea, irises, everything was in bloom in January.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's crazy. I will say, like, all the bulbs, maybe because they're, they're under the ground, they're a little more slow to respond to environmental changes. They're all blooming on schedule.
Okay, so, good. Good. Maybe I just have a really warm garden. I just give it lots, so much love that it's just extra warm.
Well, are you in the city as well? I mean,
yes,
it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a bunch of. I mean, there's no asphalt around the farm, so it's just all dirt. So.
Yeah, which is how it should be.
Well, and maybe I don't love my garden as much as you.
Send them more love, Chris. You got to talk to them. Mom doesn't talk to her plants, but I do. I go out there almost every day, and I tell them how gorgeous they look and how great they're doing, and especially during the freeze, I give them a lot of extra love. It works.
Yeah,
she talks to them. I listen.
That works. I'll say this. The biggest, speaking of talking to your plants or just being with the plants and gardening, the older I get, it is such a stress reliever for me just to be outside. Yeah. I can't tell you how much stress it relieves.
100%. And I've told friends, I don't know what I would have done during COVID had I not had my garden, because especially working from home, I was just always at home. And sometimes even in the middle of the day, I just needed a little space to just be out, and I would just go and prune some things or just, you know, mulch or do whatever and be with my plants. And I would come back in feeling so much better. So I feel so grateful that I had even my little city spot of garden, because
it doesn't take a lot, right?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't take a lot. Yeah.
Well, in fact, Chris and I had, when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, we were saying how our customers are needing so much more garden therapy and are needing to talk about their plants and their gardens and so much more than they used to due to COVID and now the freeze. And people need to talk about that, their connection with their gardens.
I would say half the customers who call in to the bulb company, you know, because you can really order everything online. Of course, there's been technical glitches. Then we had snowpocalypse where things were delayed, and then we had a surge of orders. And so it was kind of a rough start to the year for us, trying to get everything out on time. And, you know, people letting you know when they're not happy. And we try to, I don't care if there's a problem. We'll throw an extra bag of bulbs in there. But, you know, they can get really worked up. And when they called in, I realized that there's an underlying issue normally, and a lot of it's just sort of this pent up stress about the world and what's going on. And so I'd say half the customers that come in, call in, they really want to talk. They just want to talk, and it's usually it's nothing to do about the bulbs they order. I mean, that might have triggered something, but I mean, I had one person on the phone where I said, "Hey, I'm sorry they froze. We thought we had shipped them out early enough. We saw a freeze coming, but the post office delayed it 2 weeks, and you know, don't worry about it. We're going to get you more bulbs." I mean, they were irate when they called them. We're going to send you more. I mean, really, we're not a big corporation. Once you got a hold of us, we've heard your voice. You know, once we sort of just kind of lowered that defense of, you're not just another, you know, malfunctioning computer program that's stealing all my personal information, that's not doing what you said you're going to do in this world. Once you kind of lowered that, they started crying. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm just so stressed. And it just seems like the world's falling apart around me. I'm like, well, I completely get it because we all feel like that right now. Yeah, I said, but have no fear. We're real people with a real flower bulb company, really in Texas, and you're going to get real bulbs in your hands and they're really going to be pretty once you have them. So, you know, life's going to be okay.
People need to get out in their yards more often and just garden and connect with nature more. Yeah. It's good therapy.
And if you have a small space, Mariana, the nice thing about that is it doesn't take that long to make it look pretty.
I know. So, Chris, I'm running out of places to plant. And so now my next thing, and actually I was just talking, it's so great that we're talking to you because I was just talking to my mom the other day, a couple weeks ago, about how I want perennial bulbs coming out in that strip that is between the sidewalk and the street. You know, that it's just like an empty space, and I've run out of space to plant. So I'm like, how cool would it be to just have a strip of perennial bulbs that are changing all the time, and it's always new, and when people walk by they can see something new and pretty. So that's my next planting area, and I'm pretty sure the city is okay with that, but I'm in Oak Cliff, they don't really care.
Yeah,
Oak Cliff is perfect for that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I would say don't do like rain lilies or summer bloomers because you are going to want to be able to mow that. I would do something like, you know, narcissus that bloom in the spring mixed in with red spider lilies that bloom in the fall, but both of their foliage is under the ground in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So you can mow over that and keep the city, you know,
happy
off your back. Well,
yeah. She might even, I've even suggested putting some native ground cover like horse herb or something. I love, well, let me go back. I took out a lot of my grass and I planted the native ground cover horse herb, and I have your bulbs popping out of my ground cover, and it's just like I get these surprises year round coming out of my ground cover, and it's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. And, you know, that's a reminder, like bulbs are, my old academic advisor, Sharon DeRay, said, you know, bulbs are like old friends. You know, you kind of forget sometimes about them, but they pop back into your life and you're always glad to see them when they come.
Yeah. We have that quote here, so I'm so glad you mentioned that.
No.
We were going to ask you that at some point. It's so true.
Well, one question I want to ask you, I loved whenever I was reading your book, how your nickname kept changing through the book. First, were you Flower or Flowers?
Flower. In the military school, Texas A&M, the Corps Cadets, and I did take floral design as a freshman. I took wedding floral design as a senior, and which meant that I always had big floral bouquets in my hands. And then back in the day, Jim Johnson would, you know, if it was Friday and there were lots of leftover roses, they would just start handing them out. Like, yeah, take these with you. So the horticulture building was on West Campus. So I'd walk across the entire campus with just this massive, you know, Colombian long stem roses on my arms in uniform.
Of course, with your boots and
yeah. Yeah. And you're having to, you know, say, howdy, sir, to these upperclassmen while, you know, and so everybody's just staring at you. And so my outfit gave me the nickname Flower. So they still call me Flower. But that's when I was at Texas A&M. And then somebody said, you know, where are you going to farm these flower bulbs? It was Matt Kent. He was a teaching assistant. And he said, you need to go to the town of Golden, where they have a sweet potato festival. You're going to have sandy loam soil and lots of natural rainfall. And you could probably use some of that old potato equipment. And so I had to exit call out that you.
Yo, you're good.
You still have me?
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
And so I went up there and started farming. And after a while, everybody started calling me the bulb boy. Hey, there's the bulb boy. So went from flower to bulb boy. And then we ended up doing this thing with House and Garden magazine when it still existed. And we went up to New York and somebody knew a reporter from the New York Times and said, this sounds like a fun story for them. And they sent a reporter down. We I spent a few days searching for bulbs with this reporter. And when she did her article in 2006, she said, I'm going to call you something different. It was the Bulb Hunter. And so that kind of propelled the Bulb Hunter name into national spotlight there. And so we've just run with it. In fact, we call our newsletter the Bulb Hunter. There's a blog called bulbhunter.com, which, you know, feeds into just different horticulture sites, including the Bulb Company. So yeah, I've gone from flower to bulb boy to bulb hunter, and I'll answer to anything. So
Well, and we're going to have to start winding down. And I know my mom's probably itching to ask at least one more question. But I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about what bulb hunting actually looks like. I mean, do you just like drive and if something catches your eye, you go in? And I know you mentioned that there are certain rules to bulb hunting. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I don't do much bulb hunting anymore. I do a lot of bulb farming, right? Just the time, the days on the road are coming a little bit to an end. And it's like we alluded to, it's more of a conscious society. So knocking on somebody's door unannounced is not something I'd recommend, mm-hmm. you know, honestly. It can catch people off guard, and that's never a good situation to be in.
Yeah.
But you start to generate a feel for what's blooming and when it's blooming. And you can look at, gardens and around town and see small samplings of the perennial bulbs typically. And when something's blooming, you're looking for, that's a good time to go out and just sort of drive the old country roads. You know, you might find a big site, but let me reiterate some things. You always ask for permission before you step on somebody's land and mm-hmm. get permission to dig. Every piece of land is owned by somebody, and that's either an individual or the government or local municipality. And so you need to find the right person to ask that permission. I show a picture of a broken down gate with a bunch of campanelles, Narcissus campanelles in the distance. And I show that picture to the audiences and I say, now we all know that a broken down open gate like this is permission to go dig the bulbs. And I do a pregnant pause and wait, and everybody starts laughing. Go, no, 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 no. And they're right. I mean, if you want to test that theory, you would walk across that property line, and I guarantee you, you could be in the most rural area, and if you walk across the property line, people are watching you, and somebody will be there very mm-hmm. quickly to ask you what you're doing.
Yeah.
So always ask for permission, fill the holes back in, and leave plenty behind are the rules. To find out, you know, who owns a piece of property, there's lots of different mapping apps, and I'd have to memorize the county roads that I went down to and go to the appraisal district and pull out their physical maps mm-hmm. and then find who owned a piece of land, like, and use information 411. But now you can find a lot of that stuff pretty easily on white pages. And, I don't have to lurk around like a shady character waiting, you know, knock on the neighbor's door or waiting for somebody to pull up. It's usually a quick few phone calls now to get permission. So, you know, you use the smaller gardens in town. You could even visit, you know, a cemetery just to see what's blooming, not to dig there, see what's blooming. And if it's there in an old fashioned cemetery or somebody's house, it's a pretty good bet you could drive around the country roads and see it. If you don't see any blooming in any town or anywhere, then I wouldn't waste my time driving kind of the county roads in that area, because you're not gonna find anything. Mm-hmm. So some things are easier to find than others. But like I said, I do mostly farming these days, just trying to grow what we have. So, but those are fun days too, exploring. And I'll tell you what, I mean, there's almost always an exception when you call as a flower lover, where people can be really standoffish about not wanting you on their land. But if you tell them what you're there about flowers, it's like the walls come down, and generally the payment that they require is that you listen to the story of their grandparents, great grandparents, or their parents who loved the flower bulbs, that was their old home site, loved to share that they originally came down from Missouri, or they brought them from the East Coast when they moved here a long time ago. And, you know, they want you to listen to their stories, and that's the payment you give them. And I've tried my best to remember stories and write them down as they come along as well. So
that's awesome. I've never met a bulb hunter before, so this is great. You're very cool. Your job is very cool.
Oh, it's like all things. It can be a little romanticized, but yeah, it's cool.
It does sound glamorous, doesn't it? Except for when you're digging up crinums. Mariana and Toby have some crinums in their backyard. And didn't y'all dig?
Their roots are real deep.
And yeah, Homer wrote in the Odyssey about a flower that the gods couldn't pull out of the ground. And he's talking about a crinum. I've got a pile of broken shovels.
It's so true. Yes, they are deep. It's not giving up.
I wish y'all could see Chris's face thinking about digging.
I don't ever want to dig a crinum again. We plant those in the centers of the rows now. Before they're out there for like 5 years, we make sure we get a middle buster to pop open that row. Because if you don't, I mean, they're gonna be there. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. I had to move my crinums whenever I first planted them. I planted that it was they were
way too much sun, and I had to dig them up about 2 years ago. And oh my gosh, I don't care if I haven't planted them in the right place now. They're not moving ever again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would plant them where you want them.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. If you remember nothing else from this podcast, plant your crinums where you want them.
Totally.
Okay. This has just been so much fun. I think we need to get down to our final question. Or Mariana, did you want to? Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, I can do that now or after your final question.
Okay, let's just go to my final question. We ask this to everyone, Chris. What do you think?
Is this a pass or fail?
No, there's no right or wrong answer, and it's okay. Just fascinating to see everyone's answers. So, what is the most important thing that you think that each individual can do to help reverse global warming and climate change?
I'm a big fan of people. You know, we hear a lot about recycling. I'm more of a fan of reusing, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, there's a whole recycling industrial complex that things get pushed through. So I'm a big fan of reusing things, like, you know, try to find multiple uses for things around your house. And, you know, I got made fun of once for straightening nails, you know, I'm like, well, I've got good nails. I don't need to go to the store. I'm either cheap or just, I just wanted to reuse what I had. You know, I don't want to get in the car and drive to Home Depot. I'm a big fan of reusing things. I think that's important for lots of other reasons as well, but it's just a smaller footprint all around. And it's important for people to understand the principle of thrift and using what you have and not just throwing everything away. So
I really enjoyed, I get your, What do you send out?
Newsletter?
Yes, your new. Thank you. I get your newsletter. And wasn't it around Christmas time you had gone to a garage sale or something and you found all these pots and you used them and you were selling some of your bulbs that were ready to grow in these pots?
Yeah, there was a orchid lover in our neighborhood who had this big, I guess, solarium in their house. It was really neat. It was in the middle of the house. And I don't know. I must have thousands of these terracotta orchid pots, which I said, I'll take them all. It was just Saturday morning. Rebecca said, you need to go check out that estate sale. It's kind of neat. And you'd really appreciate what they did in the house. You know, it was a throwback to like the 70s or Brady Bunch kind of house, but it was a really neat solarium. So I'll take all the terracotta pots. 3 hours later, I was still loading them in my truck.
Oh my God. Oh, wow.
I know I've got them stacked here in the warehouse. I'm going to be reusing those for a while, but yeah, that was a fun reusing experience, right? I mean, and they've got those longer slits in there, you know, mm-hmm. for the orchids, but that's okay for forcing flower bulbs. They don't care. They did really well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I liked your answer. Thank you.
Well, yeah. For those of y'all on Patreon with us, we are going to be spending some extra time with Chris and getting in some behind the scenes stories about bulbs and bulb planting and just learning a lot more from him. And Chris, before we let you go, can you please tell everyone how all they can learn more about you and your company and your blog and what you do and how they can get in touch and just connect
and buy all your beautiful bulbs
and buy lots of bulbs.
Well, I appreciate it. The website is southernbulbs.com. You can just Google that. People often say, hey, will you put me on the list for this or that? Or when do you, I say, sign up for the Bulb Hunter newsletter. In fact, if you signed up now, I think we're running a Facebook ad. We'll probably be doing that through the fall where you get free red spiralis, I think $3.50 postage to get them to you, you know, through a first class. So you could sign up and get free red spiralis now. Nice. But really just go on the website and you can sign up for the newsletter, which is called The Bulb Hunter. But there's also the blog called bulbhunter.com. that blog is where we push a lot of our how-tos, and we're constantly working on that. And we're trying to do a big revamp and rollout of a lot of these kind of top five type articles of how do I plant my bulbs? And, you know, how much sun do they need? Number one reason the bulbs don't bloom. And do bulbs attract pollinators? And what are the best bulbs for fragrances? Just working through a lot of those questions on there.
Nice, nice. Well, we'll make sure to link all of those in the show notes. So listeners, y'all can just click on that and head over to learn more and buy what all the amazing bulbs that Chris has to offer. So Chris, thank you again so much. I just love learning from people who have such unique passions, and I will definitely put you into that category. This has been so much fun. So thank you for spending the time with us.
It's been a blast. Yeah.